but then stops again with a quick halt, a screech of brakes, and he is shunted sideways, his shoulder taking the brunt of the whack, and his leg presses hard against the chains. He quickly checks the camera. Perfect. No problem. His favorite moment, this. Stop dead. In the tunnel, near the mouth, but still in the dark. He catches the metal lip of the door with his fingers, rights himself, and leans once more against the door. Nonchalance. Ease. In the dark of tunnel now, between Fulton and Wall Street, all the suits and haircuts getting ready to pile out. There is no new rumble from the train, and he likes these silences. Gives him time to scope out the walls. He takes a quick look down the car to make sure there's no cops, places one foot on the chains, and shunts himself up, grabs the lip of the car, one arms himself high. If he stood on the roof, he could touch the curve of the tunnel. Good place for a tag. But he holds onto the lip of the car and peers out over the edge. Some red and white markings on the walls where they curve. A few yellow lights sulphurous in the distance. He waits for his eyes to adjust, for the little retina stars to leave. Along the rear distance of the train, small bars of color bleed out from the edge of each car and spray outward. Nothing on the walls, though. A tagging Antarctica. What did he expect? Hardly going to be any writers downtown. But you never know. That would be the genius. That would be the point. Buff this, maricón. He feels the chain jiggle beneath his feet, the first warning of movement, and he holds a little tighter to the rim of the car. None of the bombers ever get the ceiling. Virgin territory. He should start a movement himself, a brand new space. He looks out along the length of the train, then goes a little higher on his toes. At the far end of the tunnel, he spies a patch of what could be paint on the east wall, a tag he hasn't seen before, something quick and oblong, with what looks like a tinge of red around silver, a P, or an R, or an 8 maybe. Clouds and flames. He should make his way back through the cars, among the dead and dreaming, and get closer to the wall, decipher the tag. But just then, the train jolts a second time, and it's a warning signal, he knows it. He hops back down, braces himself. As the wheels grind, he trills the sighting through his mind, matches it up against all the old tags in other parts of the tunnel. And he figures, it's brand new. It must be. Yes! And he gives a quiet fist pump. Someone's come and tagged downtown. Within seconds, the train is in the pale station light of Wall Street, and the doors are hissing open. But his eyes are closed, and he is mapping it out, the height, the color, the depth of the new tag, trying to put a geography on it for the way home, where he can take it back, own it, photograph it, make it his. A radio sound. The static moving toward him. He leans out. Cops. Coming up from the end of the platform. They've seen him, for sure. Going to drag him out, give him a ticket. Four of them. Belts jiggling. He slides open the door to the car, ducks inside. Waits for the slap of a hand on his shoulder. Nothing. He leans back against the cool metal of the door. Catches sight of them sprinting out past the turnstiles, like there's some fire to get to. All of them clanging. Handcuffs and guns and nightsticks and notepads and flashlights and God knows what else. Someone's bought it, he thinks. Someone's gone and bought it. He squeezes sideways through the closing doors, holding the camera sideways so it doesn't get scratched. Behind him, the door hisses shut. A jaunt in his step. Out the turnstile and up the stairs. To hell with a barbershop. Irwin can wait.
Ether West. It's early in the morning, and the fluorescents are flickering. We're taking a break from the graphics hack. Dennis gets the Blue Box program running through the PDP-10 to see if we can catch a good hook. It's Dennis, Gareth, Compton, and me. Dennis is the oldest, almost 30. We like to call him Grandpa. He did 2 tours in NAMM. Compton graduated UC Davis. Gareth's been programming for must be 10 years. Me, I'm 18. They call me the kid. I've been hanging out at the Institute since I was 12. "How many rings, guys?" says Compton. 3, says Dennis, like he's already bored. 20, says Gareth. 8, I say. Compton flicks a look at me. "The kid speaks," he says. True enough, most of the time I just let my hack work do the talking. It's been like that since I sneaked in the basement door of the Institute back in 68. I was out skipping school, a kid in short pants and broken glasses. The computer was spitting out a line of ticker tape, and the guys at the console let me watch it. The next morning they found me sleeping on the doorstep. "Hey, look, it's the kid." Nowadays I'm here all day, every day. And the truth is, I'm the best hacker they got. The one who did all the patches for the Blue Box program. The line gets picked up on the 9th ring, and Compton slaps my shoulder, leans into the microphone, and says to the guy in his smooth clip so as not to freak him out, "Hi, yeah, don't hang up. This is Compton here."
"Excuse me?"
"Compton here. Who's this?"
"Payphone."
"Don't hang up."
"This is a payphone, sir."
"Who's speaking?"
"What number are you looking for?"
"I have New York, right?"
"I'm busy, man."
"Are you near the World Trade Center?"
"Yeah, man, but..."
"Don't hang up."
"You must have got a wrong number, man."
The line goes dead. Compton hits the keyboard, and the speed dial kicks in, and there's a pickup on the 13th ring. "Please don't hang up. I'm calling from California."
"Huh?
Are you near the World Trade Center?"
"Kiss my ass."
We can hear a half chuckle as the phone gets slammed down. Compton pings 6 numbers all at once, waits. "Hi, sir?"
"Yes?"
"Sir, are you in the vicinity of downtown New York?"
"Who's this?"
"We're just wondering if you could look up for us."
"Very funny, ha ha."
The line goes dead again. "Hello, ma'am?"
"I'm afraid you must have the wrong number."
"Hello, don't hang up."
"I'm sorry, sir, but I'm in a bit of a hurry."
"Excuse me."
"Try the operator, please."
"Bite me," says Compton to the dead line. We're thinking that we should pack it all in and go back to the graphics hack. It's 4 or 5 in the morning, and the sun'll soon be coming up. I guess we could even go home if we wanted to. Catch a few Z's instead of sleeping under the desks like usual. Pizza boxes for pillows, and sleeping bags among the wires. But Compton hits the enter key again. It's a thing we do all the time for kicks. Blue boxing through the computer, to dial a disk in London, say. Or to the weather girl in Melbourne. Or the time clock in Tokyo. Or to a phone booth we found in the Shetland Islands. Just for fun. To blow off steam from the programming. We loop and stack the calls, route and reroute so we can't be traced. We go in first through an 800 number just so we don't have to drop the dime. Hertz and Avis and Sony, and even the Army Recruiting Center in Virginia. That tickled the hell out of Gareth, who got out of NAMM on a 4F. Even Dennis, who's worn his Occidental Death t-shirt ever since he came home from the war, got off on that one big time, too. One night we were all lazing around and we hacked the code words to get through to the president, then called the White House. We layered the call through Moscow just to fool them. Dennis said, "I have a very urgent message for the president." Then he rattled off the code words.
"Just a moment, sir," said the operator.
We nearly pissed in our pants. We got past two other operators and were just about to get through to Nixon himself, but Dennis got the jitters and said to the guy,
"Just tell the president we've run out of toilet paper in Palo Alto."
That cracked us up. But for weeks afterwards, we kept waiting for the knock on the door. It became a joke after a while. We started calling the pizza boy Secret Agent Number One. It was Compton who got the message on the ARPANET this morning. It came over the AP service on the 24-hour message board. We didn't believe it at first. Some guy walking the wires high above New York? But then Compton got on the line with an operator, pretended he was a switchman testing out some verification trunks on the payphones, said he needed some numbers down close to the World Trade Buildings, part of an emergency line analysis, he said. And then we programmed the numbers in, skipped them through the system, and we each took bets on whether he'd fall or not. Simple as that. The signals bounced through the computer, multi-frequency bips, like something on a flute, and we catch the guy on the ninth ring.
Hello? Are you near the World Trade Center, sir? Hello, excuse me? This is not a joke. Are you near the World Trades? This phone was just ringing out here, man. I just picked it up.
He's got one of those New York accents, young but grouchy, like he smoked too many cigarettes.
I know, says Compton. But can you see the buildings? From where you're standing? Is there someone up there? Who is this? Is there someone up there? I'm watching him right now.
You what?
I'm watching him.
Far out.
You can see him? I've been watching him 20 minutes. More, man. Are you... This phone just rang and I...
He can see him.
Compton slaps his hands against the desk, takes out his pocket protector and flings it across the room. His long hair goes flying around his face. Gareth dances a little jig over by the printout table, and Dennis walks by and takes me in a light headlock and knuckles my scalp. Like he doesn't really care, but he likes to see us get our kicks. Like he's still the army sergeant or something.
I told you, shouts Compton. Who's this? Says the voice. Far out. Who the hell is this?
Is he still on the tightrope?
What's going on? Are you messing with me, man?
Is he still there?
He's been up there 25 minutes.
All right. Is he walking?
He's going to kill himself.
Is he walking?
No, he's stopped right now.
Standing there?
Yeah.
He's just standing there? Midair?
Yeah, he's got the bar going, up and down in his hands.
In the middle of the wire?
Near the edge.
How near?
Not too near. Near enough.
Like what? 5 yards? 10 yards? Is he steady?
Steady as shit. Who wants to know? What's your name?
Compton. Yours?
Jose.
Jose? Cool. Jose. ¿Qué onda, amigo?
Huh?
¿Qué onda, cardinal?
I don't speak Spanish, man.
Compton hits the mute button and punches Gareth's shoulder. Can you believe this guy? Just don't lose him. I've seen SAT questions with more brains than this one. Just keep him on the line, man. Compton leans into the console and takes the mic again. Can you tell us what's happening, Jose?
Tell you what, man?
Like, describe it.
Oh, well, he's up there.
And?
He's just standing.
And?
Where are you calling from, anyway?
California.
Seriously?
I am serious.
You're fucking with me, right?
No.
This is a hoax, man?
No hoax, Jose.
Are we on TV? We're on TV, ain't we?
We haven't got TV. We've got a computer.
A what?
It's complicated, Jose.
You telling me I'm talking to a computer?
Don't worry about it, man.
What is this? Is this candid camera?
Are you looking at me right now? Am I on?
On what, Jose?
I'm on the show? Ah, come on. You've got a camera here somewhere. Come clean, man. For real. I love that show, man. Love it.
This is not a show.
Are you Alan Funt, man?
What?
Where are your cameras? I don't see no cameras. Hey, man, are you in the Woolworth building? Is that you up there? Hey!
I'm telling you, Jose, we're in California.
You're trying to tell me I'm talking to a computer?
Sort of.
You're in California? People! Hey, people!
He says it real loud, holding the receiver out, and we can hear voices chattering and the wind. And I guess it's one of those payphones in the middle of the street, covered in stickers with sexy girls and all. And we can hear some sirens going in the background. Big, high whoops. And a woman laughing. And a few muffled shouts. A car horn. A vendor roaring about peanuts. Some guy saying he's got the wrong lens. He needs a better angle. And some other guy shouting, "Don't fall!"
"People," he says again. "I got this nut job here. Guy from California. Go figure. Hey, you there?"
"I'm here, Jose. Is he up there still?"
"You're a friend of his?"
"No."
"How did you know, then, if you're calling in?"
"It's complicated. We're freaking. We hack the system. Man, is he still up there? That's all I want to know."
He pulls the phone away again and his voice sways.
"Where are you from again?"
he shouts.
"Palo Alto." "No kidding."
"Honestly, Jose."
"He says the guy's from Palo Alto. What's his name?"
"Compton."
"The guy's name is Compton." "Yeah, Compton. Yeah. Yeah. Just a minute. Hey, man, there's a guy here wants to know Compton what? What's his last name?"
"No, no, my name is Compton."
"What's his name, man? His name?"
"Jose, can you just tell me what's happening?"
"Can I have some of what you're on? You're tripping, aren't you? You really a friend of his? Hey, listen up. I got some whack job on the phone from California. He says the guy's from Palo Alto. The tightrope walker's from Palo Alto.
Jose, listen to me a moment, please, okay?
We got a bad line. What's his name?"
"I don't know.
I think we got a bad connection. We got some nut job. I don't know, he's jabbering, man. Computers and shit. Oh! Holy shit! Holy shit!"
"What?
What?" "Holy freaking shit!"
"What? Hello?"
"No! "Jesus!"
"Hello, you there?"
"Jesus H!"
"Hello?
I can't believe it!" "José!" "Yeah, I'm here! He just hopped! Did you see that?"
"He what?"
"He, like, hopped! Holy freaking shit!"
"He jumped?"
"No!"
"He fell?"
"No, man!"
"He's dead?"
"No, man."
"What?"
"He hopped from foot to foot. He's wearing black, man. You can see it. He's still up there. This guy's awesome. Holy shit. I thought he was a goner. He just went up on one foot and the other. Oh, man."
"He hopped?"
"Exactly."
"Like a bunny hop?"
"More like a scissors thing. He just... Man, fuck me! Oh, man, fuck me, running backwards. He just, like, did a little scissors thing. On the wire, man."
"Far out.
Can you freaking believe that? He a gymnast or something? He looks like he's dancing. Is he a dancer? Hey, man, is your friend a dancer?"
"He's not really my friend, Jose."
"I swear to Christ, he must be tied to something or something. Tied to the wire. I bet he's tied. He's up there and he just did the scissors thing. Far freaking out."
"Jose, listen up. We've got a bet going here. What's he look like?"
He's holding it, man. Holding it.
Can you see him well?
Like a speck. Like a little thing. He's way the fuck up there. But he hopped. He's in black. You can see his legs.
Is it windy?
No, it's muggy as shit.
It's not windy.
Up there, it's gotta be windy, man. Jesus. He's like all the way up there. I don't know how the fuck they're gonna get him down. They got pigs up there. Lots of them.
Huh?
They got cops. Swarming round the top. On both sides.
They trying to get him?
No, he's way the fuck out there. He's standing now. Just holding the bar. Oh, no way! No!
What? What is it?
Jose? He's crouching. Check this shit out.
Huh?
You know, kneeling.
He's what?
He's sitting now, man.
What do you mean he's sitting?
He's sitting on the wire. This guy is sick.
Jose,
check it out.
Hello? There's another silence, his breath against the mouthpiece. Jose. Hey, amigo. Jose? My friend?
No way.
Compton leans in closer to the computer, the microphone at his lips. Jose, buddy. Can you hear me? Jose? You there?
Untrue.
Jose,
I ain't shitting you.
What?
He's lying down.
On the wire?
Yes, on the fucking wire.
And?
He's got his feet hooked in under him. He's looking up at the sky. He looks weird.
And the bar?
The what?
The pole?
Across his stomach, man. This guy is unfucking real.
He's just lying there.
Yep.
Like taking a nap?
What?
Like a siesta?
Are you trying to mindfuck me, man?
Am I... What? Course not, Jose. No. No way. No. There's a long silence on the phone, like Jose has just transported himself up there alongside the tightrope walker. Jose?
Hey.
Hello.
Jose, how's he going to get back up, Jose?
Jose! I mean, if he's lying down, how's he going to get back up? Are you sure he's lying down?
Jose!
You there?
Are you saying I'm a liar?
No, I'm just, like, speaking.
Tell me this, man. You're in California?
Yeah, man.
Prove it.
I can't, really. Compton mutes himself once again.
Can someone pass me the hemlock? Get someone else, says Gareth. Tell him to give the phone to someone.
Some guy who can read, at least. His name's Jose, and the dude can't even speak Spanish. He leans right back in. Do me a favor there, Jose. Can you pass the phone along?
Why?
We're doing an experiment.
You calling from California? No shit. You think I'm a retard? Is that what you think?
Give me someone else there, will ya?
Why?
He says again. And we hear him pull the phone away from his mouth again. And there's a crowd around him, jabbering away, oohs and ahs. And then we hear the phone drop. And he says something about a freak ball, and something else faint and whispery. And then he's shouting as the phone swings around and the voices get caught in the wind.
Anyone want to talk to this fruitcake? He thinks he's calling from California.
Jose, just pass the phone, man, will you? The phone must be swinging in the air, but it's getting slower. The voice is steady, and behind them, some sirens, someone shouting now about hot dogs. And I can see it in my mind's eye. They're all down there, milling about. And the taxis are stopped, and the necks are craned upwards, and Jose is letting the phone swing at his knees.
Oh, I don't know, man, he says. It's some dipshit from California. I don't know. I think he wants you to say something. Yeah, about it, like, what's happening. You wanna...
Hey, Jose. Jose. Pass it along there, Jose.
After a second or two, he picks up the phone and says,
"This guy's gonna talk to you."
Oh, thank Christ.
"Hello," says a guy in a very low voice.
"Hi, this is Compton. We're out here in California."
"Hello, Compton.
I'm just wondering if you could describe things for us there."
"Well, that's difficult right now."
"Why's that?"
"Something terrible happened."
"Huh?"
"He fell."
"He what?"
"Smashed to the ground. Terrible commotion here. Do you hear that siren? You can't hear that? Listen."
"It's hard to hear."
"There's cops running through. They're crawling all over the place."
Jose, is that you? Did someone fall?"
"He smashed here, right here at my feet. It's all blood and shit."
"Who's this? Is this Jose?"
"Listen to the sirens, man."
"Get out of here."
"He splattered all over the place."
"Are you shitting me?"
"Man, it's horrible."
The phone slams, the line goes dead, and Compton looks around at us, eyes bugging.
"You think he bought it?"
"Of course not."
"That was Jose," says Gareth.
"That was a different voice."
"No, it wasn't. It was Jose. He was dogging us. I can't believe he dogged us."
"Try the number again."
"You never know. Could be true. Could have fallen."
"Try it." "I'm not paying any debt," Compton shouts, "unless I hear it live."
"Oh, come on," says Gareth.
"Guys," says Dennis, "we gotta hear it live. A bet's a bet."
"Guys, you're always welching on your bets, man."
"Try the number again."
"Guys, we've got work to do," says Dennis.
"I'm thinking that we could maybe even get that patch tonight." He slaps me on the shoulder and says, "Right, kid?"
"Tonight is already tomorrow, man," says Gareth.
"What if he did fall?"
"He didn't fall. That was Jose, man."
The line's busy.
"Get another one."
"Try the ARPANET, man."
"Get real.
Get a payphone.
Bounce it."
"I can't believe it's busy."
"Well, unbusy it."
"I'm not God."
"Then find someone who is, man." "Oh, brother, they're all just ringing out."
Dennis steps over the pizza boxes on the floor and passes the printout machine, slaps the side of the PDP-10, then thumps his chest right by his occidental death.
"Work, guys."
"Aw, come on, Dennis."
"It's 5 a.m.
"No, let's find out."
"Work, guys. Work."
It's Dennis's company, after all, and he's the one who doles out the cash at the end of the week. Not that anyone buys anything except comics and copies of Rolling Stone. Dennis supplies everything else, even the toothbrushes in the basement bathroom. He learned everything he needed to know over there in Nam. He likes to say that he's in on the ground level, that he's making his own little Xerox of Xerox. He makes his money on our hacks for the Pentagon, but the file transferring programs are his real thing. "One of these centuries, we're all going to have the ARPANET in our heads," he says. "There'll be a little computer chip in our minds. They'll embed it at the base of our skulls, and we'll be able to send each other messages on the electronic board, just by thinking. It's electricity," he says. "It's Faraday. It's Einstein. It's Edison. It's the Wilt Chamberlain of the future." I like that idea. That's cool. That's possible. That way we wouldn't even have to think of phone lines. People don't believe us, but it's true. Someday you'll just think something and it'll happen. "Turn off the light." The light turns off. "Make the coffee." The machine kicks on.
"Come on, man, just 5 minutes.
"All right," says Dennis.
5. That's it."
"Hey, are all the frames linked?" says Gareth.
"Yeah."
"Try it over there, too."
"Have tone, we'll phone."
"Come on, kid, get your ass over there. Call up the Blue Box program."
"Let's go fishing."
I built my first crystal radio when I was 7. Some wire, a razor blade, a piece of pencil, an earphone, an empty roll of toilet paper. I made a variable capacitor from layers of aluminum foil and plastic, all pressed together using a screw. No batteries. I got the plans from a Superman comic. It only got one station, but that didn't matter. I listened late at night under the covers. In the room next door, I could hear my folks fighting. They were both strung out. They went from laughter to crying and back again. When the station kicked off the air, I put my hand over the earphone and took in the static. I learned later when I built another radio that you could put the antenna in your mouth, and the reception got better and you could drown out all the noise easily. See, when you're programming too, the world grows small and still. You forget about everything else. You're in a zone. There are no backward glances. The sound and the lights keep pushing you onwards. You gather pace. You keep on going. The variations comply. The sound funnels inwards to a point, like an explosion seen in reverse. Everything comes down to a single point. It might be a voice recognition program, or a chess hack, or writing lines for a Boeing helicopter radar. It doesn't matter. The only thing you care about is the next line coming your way. On a good day, it can be 1,000 lines. On a bad one, you can't find where it all falls apart. I've never been that lucky in my life. I'm not complaining. It's just the way it is. But this time, after just 2 minutes, I catch a hook. "I'm on Cortlandt Street," she says. I swivel on the chair and pump my fist. "Got one!"
"The kid's got one."
"Kid! Hang on," I tell her.
"Excuse me," she says.
There's bits of pizza lying around my feet and empty soda bottles. The guys run across and kick them aside, and a roach scurries out from one of the boxes. I've rigged a double microphone into the computer, with foam ends from packing material, the stand from a wire hanger. These are highly sensitive, low distortion. I made them myself. Just 2 small plates put close to each other, insulated. My speakers, too. I made them from radio scrap.
"Look at these things," says Compton, flicking the big foam ends of the mic.
"Excuse me," says the lady.
"Sorry. Hi. I'm Compton," he says, pushing me out of my seat.
"Hi, Colin."
"Is he still up there?"
"He's wearing a black jumpsuit thing."
"Told you he didn't fall."
"Well, not exactly a jumpsuit. A pantsuit thing. With a V-neck. Flared trousers. He's extremely poised."
"Excuse me?"
"Get out of here," says Gareth.
"Poised? Is she for real? Poised? Who says poised?"
"Shut up," says Compton, and he turns to the mic. "Ma'am? Hello? It's just the one man up there, right?"
"Well, he must have some accomplices."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, surely it's impossible to get a wire from one side to the other. On your own, that is. He must have a team."
"Can you see anyone else?"
"Just the police."
"How long has he been up there?"
"Roughly 43 minutes, she says.
"Roughly?"
"I got out of the subway at 7:50.
"Oh, okay."
"And he'd just begun."
"Okay, gotcha."
He tries to cover both mics at once, but instead draws back and circles his finger at his temple like he's caught a crazy fish.
"Thanks for helping us."
"No problem," she says. "Oh?
You there? Hello?"
"There he goes again. He's walking across again."
"How many times is that?"
"That's his 6th or 7th time across. He's awfully fast this time. Awfully, awfully fast."
"He's, like, running?"
A big round of applause goes up in the background, and Compton leans back from the mic, swivels the chair sideways a little.
These things look like goddamn lollipops, he says. He turns back to the microphone and pretends to lick it.
Sounds crazy there, ma'am. Are there many people?
This corner alone? Well, there must be 600-700 people or more.
How long do you think he'll stay up there?
My word.
What's that?
Well, I'm late.
Just hang on there a minute more there, can you?
I mean, I can't stand here talking all the time.
And the cops?
There's some policemen leaning out over the edge. I think they're trying to coax him back in.
Hmm, she says.
What?
Hello?
No answer.
What is it? Says Compton.
Excuse me, she says.
What's going on?
Well, there's a couple of helicopters. They are getting very close.
How close?
I hope they don't blow him off.
How close are they?
70 yards or so. 100 yards at most. Well, they're backing off right now. Oh, my.
What is it?
Well, the police helicopter backed off.
Yes.
Goodness!
What is it?
Right now, this very moment, he's actually waving. He's bending over with the pole resting on his knee. His thigh, actually. His right thigh.
Seriously?
And he's fluttering his arm.
How do you know?
I think it's called saluting.
It's what?
A sort of showboating. He bends down on the wire, and he balances himself. And he takes one hand off the pole, and he... Well, yes, he's saluting us.
How do you know?
Oops-a-daisy,
she says. What?
You okay?
Lady?
No, no, I'm fine.
Are you still there?
Hello?
Excuse me?
How can you see him so clearly?
Glasses.
Huh?
I'm watching him through glasses. It's hard to balance glasses and the phone at once. One second, please.
She's glassing him, says Dennis. You've got binoculars? Asks Compton. Hello? Hello? You've got binocs?
Well, yes. Opera glasses.
Get out of here, says Gareth.
I went to see Marikova last night. At the ABT, I forgot them. The glasses, I mean. She's wonderful, by the way, with Baryshnikov.
Hello?
Hello? In my handbag. I left them there all night. Fortuitous, really.
Fortuitous? Says Gareth. This chick's a hoot. Shut the hell up, says Compton, covering my mic. Can you see his face, ma'am?
One moment, please.
Where's the helicopter?
Oh, it's way away.
Is he still saluting?
Just a moment, please.
It sounds as if she's holding the phone away from herself for a moment. And we hear some high cheers and a few gasps of delight. And suddenly, I want nothing more than for her to come back to us. Forget about the tightrope man. I want our opera glasses woman and the rich sound of her voice and the funny way she says fortuitous. I'd say she's old, but that doesn't matter. It's not like a sexy thing. I don't like her like that. It's not like I'm getting off on her or anything. I've never had a girlfriend. It's no big deal. I don't think that way. I just like her voice. Besides, it was me who found her. I figure she's about 35 or more even, with a long neck and a pencil skirt. But who knows? She could be 40 or 45, older even, with her hair sprayed into place and a set of wooden dentures in her purse. Then again, she's probably beautiful. Dennis is over in the corner shaking his head and smiling. Compton's doing the finger-circling thing, and Gareth is cracking up. All I want to do is push them out of my chair and stop them using my stuff. I got a right to my own stuff.
Ask her why she's there, I whisper.
The kid speaks again.
You okay, kid?
Just ask her.
Don't be a drip, says Compton. He leans backwards and laughs, covering my mic with both hands, starts bouncing back and forth in my chair. His legs are kicking up and down, and the pizza boxes are scattering at his feet.
Excuse me, says the lady. There's noise on the line.
Ask her how old she is. Go on.
Shut up, kid.
Shut up you, your goddamn self, Compton.
Compton smacks my forehead with the heel of his hand.
Listen to the kid.
Come on, just ask her.
The beloved American right to the pursuit of horniness.
Gareth starts laughing his ass off, and Compton leans into the mic again and says,
Are you still there, ma'am?
I'm here, she says.
Is he still saluting?
Well, he's standing now. The policemen are leaning out, over the edge.
The helicopter?
Nowhere near.
Any more bunny hops?
Excuse me?
Did he do any more bunny hops?
I didn't see that. He didn't do any bunny hops. Who did bunny hops?
From foot to foot, like?
He's a real showman.
Gareth giggles.
Are you taping me?
No, honestly.
I hear voices in the background.
We're in California. We're cool, don't worry. We're computer guys.
As long as you're not taping me.
Oh, no, you're cool.
There are legal issues about that.
Of course.
Anyway, I really should...
Just a moment, I say, leaning all the way across Compton's shoulder.
Compton pushes me back and asks if the tightrope walker is looking nervous, and the woman takes a long time to answer, like she's chewing on the whole idea and wondering whether to swallow it.
Well, he looks rather calm. His body, that is. He looks calm.
You can't see his face?
Not exactly, no.
She's beginning to fade, like she doesn't want to talk to us much anymore, evaporating down the line. But I want her to just hang on. I don't know why. It feels like she's my aunt or something, like I've known her a long time, which is impossible, of course, but I don't care anymore. And I grab the microphone and bend it away from Compton, and I say, You work there, ma'am? Compton throws his head right back to laugh again, and Gareth tries tickling my nuts, and I mouth the word asshole at him.
Well, yes, I'm a librarian.
Really?
Hawk, Brown, and Wood, in the research library.
What's your name?
59th floor.
Your name?
I really don't know if I should.
I'm not trying to be rude.
No.
I'm Sam. I'm out here in a research lab. Sam Peters. We work on computers. I'm a programmer.
I see.
I'm 18.
Congratulations, she laughs.
It's almost like she can hear me blush on the other end of the phone. Gareth is bent over double with laughter.
Sable Senatore,
she says finally, in a voice like soft water.
Sable? That's right.
Can I ask?
Yes?
How old are you?
Silence again.
They're all cracking up, but there's a sweet point in her voice, and I don't want to hang up. I keep trying to imagine her there, under those big towers, looking upwards, opera glasses around her neck, getting ready to go to work in some law firm with wood paneling and pots of coffee.
It's 8:30 in the morning, she says.
Excuse me?
Hardly time for a date.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm 29, Sam. A little old for you.
Oh. Sure enough, Gareth starts hobbling around like he's using a walking stick, and Compton is doing little caveman howls. Even Dennis slides up against me and says,
Lover boy.
Then Compton shoves me sideways from the table and says something about his bet. He's got to get the bet resolved.
Where is he? Sable? Where's the guy now?
Is this Colin again?
Compton.
Well, he's at the edge of the South Tower.
How long's the distance between the towers?
Hard to judge. A couple of hundred. Oh, there he goes.
A great big noise all around her, and whooshing and cheering, and it's like everything has become undone and is lapsing into babble. And I think of all the thousands off the buses and the trains seeing it for the first time, and I wish I was there with her, and I get a wobbly feeling in my knees.
He lay down? Asks Compton.
No. No, of course not. He's done.
He stopped?
He just walked right in. He saluted again, and waved, and then walked right in. Very fast. Ran, kind of.
He's done?
Shit! I win, says Gareth.
Aw, he's done? You sure? That's it?
The police at the edge are taking him in. They have the pole. Oh, listen!
There are huge hoots and a tremendous round of applause from near the phone. Compton looks annoyed, and Gareth snaps his fingers like he's snapping money. I lean in and take the microphone.
He's finished? Hello, can you hear me?
Sable, I say.
Well, she says, I really must, before you go. Is this Samuel?
Can I ask you a personal question?
Well, I guess you already have.
Can I get your number? I ask.
She laughs, says nothing.
Are you married?
Another laugh, a regret in it.
Sorry, I say.
No.
Excuse me?
And I don't know whether she's said no to giving me her number, or no to being married, or maybe both at once. But then she lets out a little laugh that flutters away.
Compton is digging in his pocket for money. He slides a $5 bill across to Gareth.
I was just wondering, really, Sam? I must go. I'm not a weirdo. Toodle-pips. And the line goes dead. I look up, and Gareth and Compton are staring at me.
Toodle-pips, roars Gareth. Get a load of that. He's poised.
Shut up, man.
That's fortuitous.
Shut up, asswipe.
Touchy, touchy.
Someone fell, says Compton with a grin.
I was just messing with her. I was just fooling.
Toodle-pips.
Can I get your number, please?
Shut your mouth.
Hey, the kid gets angry.
I step over to the phone and hit the enter key on the keyboard again. But it just rings and rings and rings.
Compton's got this strange look on his face, like he's never seen me before, like I'm some sort of brand new guy, but I don't care. I dial again. It just keeps ringing. I can see Sable in my mind's eye, walking away, down the street, up into the World Trade Center towers, to the 59th floor, all woodwork and file cabinets, saying hello to the lawyers. Settling down at her desk, putting a pencil behind her ear.
What was the name of that law firm again?
Toodle-pips, says Gareth.
Forget about it, man, says Dennis.
He's standing there in his t-shirt, hair all askew.
She ain't coming back, says Compton.
What makes you so sure?
Women's intuition, he says with a giggle.
We got to work on that patch, says Dennis. Up and at it.
Not me, says Compton. I'm going home. I haven't slept in years.
Sam, how about you?
It's the Pentagon program he's talking about. We've signed a secrecy agreement. It's an easy enough thing to do. Any kid could do it, that's what I'm thinking. You just use the radar program, key in the gravitational pull, maybe use some rotation differentials, and you can find out where any missile will land.
kid?
When there's a lot of computers going all at once, the place hums. It's more than white noise. It's the sort of hum that makes you feel that you're the actual ground lying under the sky. A blue hum that's all above and around you. But if you think about it too hard, it'll get too loud or big, and make you feel no more than just a speck. You're sealed in by it, the wires, the piping, the electrons moving, but nothing really moving, nothing at all. I go to the window. It's a basement window that doesn't get any light. That's one thing I don't understand, windows in basements. Why would anyone put a window in a basement? Once I tried to open it, but it doesn't move. I bet the sun is coming up outside.
"Toodle-pips," says Gareth.
I want to go across the room and hit him. A punch. A real punch. Something that'll really hurt him. But I don't. I settle down at the console, hit escape, then the N key, then the Y key, leave the blue box hack. No more freaking today. I open up the graphics program, use my password. SAMUS17. We've been working 6 months on it, but the Pentagon's been developing it for years. If there comes another war, they'll be using this hack, that's for sure. I turn to Dennis. He's already hunched over his console. The program boots. I can hear it clicking. There's a high that you get when you're writing code. It's cool. It's easy to do. You forget your mom, your dad, everything. You've got the whole country on board. This is America. You hit the frontier. You can go anywhere. It's about being connected, access, gateways. Like a whispering game where, if you get one thing wrong, you've got to go all the way back to the beginning.
This is the house that Horse built. They didn't let me go to Cargan's funeral. I would have walked the bakery line to get there. They put me back in the pen instead. I weren't crying. I laid straight out on the bench with my hand over my eyes. I saw my rap sheet. It's yellow with 54 entries. Typed up not so neat. You see your life with carbon copies. Kept in a file. Hunts Point, Lex and 49th, West Side Highway, all the way back to Cleveland. Loitering, prostitution offense, class A misdemeanor, criminal possession controlled substance, 7th degree, criminal trespass, 2nd degree, criminal possession narcotic drug, class E felony, prostitution solicitation, class A misdemeanor, degree O. The cops must have got a D in spelling. The ones in the Bronx write worse than anyone. They get an F in everything, except pulling us up on our properties. Tilly Henderson, alias Miss Bliss, alias Puzzle, alias Rosa P, alias Sweet Cakes. Race, sex, height, weight, hair color, hair type, complexion, eye color, scars, marks, tattoos, none. I got a taste for supermarket cakes. You won't find that on my yellow sheet. The day they arrested us, Bob Marley was on the radio singing, "Get up, stand up for your rights." A funny-ass cop turned the volume higher and grinned over his shoulder. Jaslyn shouted, "Who's gonna look after the babies?" I left the spoon in the baby formula. 38 years old. There ain't no prizes. Hooking was born in me. That's no exaggeration. I never wanted no square job. I lived right across from the stroll on Prospect Avenue and East 31st. From my bedroom window, I could see the girls work. I was 8. They wore red high heels and hair combed high. The daddies went by on their way to the Turkish hotel. They caught dates for their girls. They wore hats big enough to dance in. Every pimp movie you've ever seen has them pulling up in a Cadillac. It's true. Daddies drive kiddies. They like white wall tires. The fuzzy dice don't happen so often, though. I put on my first lipstick when I was 9. Shiny in the mirror. My mother's blue boots were too big for me at 11. I could have hid down inside them and popped my head out. When I was 13, I already had my hands on the hip of a man in a raspberry suit. He had a waist like a lady's, but he hit me hard. His name was Fine. He loved me so much, he didn't put me on the stroll. He said he was grooming me. My mother had religious readings. We were in the Church of the Spiritual Israel. You had to throw your head back and speak in tongues. She'd been on the stroll, too. That was years ago. She left it when her teeth fell out. She said, "Don't you do what I done, Tilly." So I done exactly that. My teeth haven't fallen out yet, but I never tricked until I was 15. I walked into the lobby of the Turkish hotel. Someone gave a low whistle. Everyone's head turned, especially mine. Then I realized they were whistling at me. Right there, I began walking with a bounce. I was turning out. My first daddy said, "Soon as you finish breaking luck, honey, come on home to me." Hose, hot pants, high heels, I hit the stroll with a vengeance. One of the things you learn early on is you don't let your hair fall down in the open window. You do that, the crazy ones grab you by the locks and pull you in, and then they beat you silly. Your first daddy you don't forget. You love him until he beats you with a tire iron. 2 days later, you're changing wheels with him. He buys you a blouse that makes your body go out and around in all the right places. I left baby Jaslyn with my mother. She kicked her legs and looked up at me. She had the whitest skin when she was born. I thought first she wasn't mine. I never knew who her daddy was. He could have been any on a list long as Sunday. People said that he might have been a Mexican, but I don't recall no Pablo sweating on me. I took her up in my arms, and that's when I said to myself, "I'm gonna treat her good all her life." The first thing you do when you have a baby is you say, "She's never gonna work the stroll." You swear it. "Not my baby. She's never gonna be out there." So you work the stroll to keep her off the stroll. I stayed that way nearly 3 years, on the stroll, running home to her, taking her in my arms, and then knew what I had to do. I said, "Look after her, Mama. I'll be right back." The skinniest dog I ever seen is the one on the side of the Greyhound buses. The first time I saw New York, I lay down on the ground outside Port Authority just so I could see the whole sky. Some guy stepped right over me without even looking down. I started hooking my very first day. I went to the Fleabag hotels over on 9th. You can make a sky out of a ceiling. That's no problem. There were a lot of sailors in New York. I used to like dancing with their hats on. In New York, you work for your man. Your man's your daddy, even if he's just a chili pimp. It's easy to find a daddy. I got lucky early on, and I found too quick. He took me on, and I worked the best stroll, 49th and Lexington. That's where Marilyn's skirt blew high, up by the subway vent. The next best stroll was way over on the west side, but Too Quick didn't like it, so I didn't go over there much. There wasn't as much scratch to be made on the west side, and the cops were always throwing their badges strictly on a property basis. They'd see how long it was since she was in jail by asking the date on your sheet. If you hadn't been inside in a while, they'd curl their fingers and say, "Come with me." I liked the east side, even if the cops were hard asses. They didn't get many colored girls on 49th and Lex. The girls were whiteies with good teeth, nice clothes, hair done fancy. They never wore no big rings because big rings get in the way. But they had beautiful manicures and their toenails sparkling. They looked at me and shouted, "What the fuck you doing here?" And I said, "I'm just doing here, girls, that's all." After a while, we didn't fight no more. No more nails scraping flesh. No more trying to break each other's fingers. I was the first nigga absolute regular on that stroll. They called me Rosa Parks. They used to say I was a chewing gum spot. Black and on the pavement. That's how it is in the life, word. You joke a lot. I said to myself, I'm going to make enough money to go home to Jaslyn and buy her a big house with a fireplace and a deck out the back with lots of nice furniture. That's what I wanted. I'm such a fuck up. No one's a bigger fuck up than me. No one's going to know that, though. That's my secret. I walk through the world like I own it. Watch this spot. Watch it curve. I got a cellmate here. She keeps a mouse in a shoebox. The mouse is the best friend she has. She talks to it and pets it. She even kisses it. Once she got bit on the lip, I laughed my ass off. She's in for 8 months on a stabbing. She won't talk to me. She'll be upstate soon. She says I ain't got no brains. Me? I'm not going upstate. No way. I made my deal with the devil. He was a little bald man with a black cape on. When I was 17, I had a body that Adam would have dropped Eve for. Hot potato time. It was prime, no lie. Nothing in the wrong place. I had legs 100 miles long and a booty to die for. Adam would have said to Eve, "Eve, I'm leaving you, honey." And Jesus himself would have been in the background saying, "Adam, you one lucky motherfucker." There was a pizza place on Lexington. A picture on the wall of all these guys in tight shorts and good skin and a ball at their feet. They were fine. But the guys inside were fat and hairy and always making jokes about pepperonis. You had to dab their pizza with a napkin just to get the oil off. The syndicates used to come around, too. You didn't want to mess with the syndicates. They had a crease in the trousers of their suits, and they smelled a brilliantine. They might bring you in for a nice guinea meal, and then you end up taking a dirt nap. Too Quick was flash. He had me on his arm like a piece of jewelry. He had 5 wives, but I was wife numero uno, top of the Christmas tree, freshest meat on the stack. You do what you can for your daddy. You light up fireworks for him. You love him to sunset, and then you go strolling. I made the most money of all, and he treated me nice. He had me ride in the front seat while the other wives watched from the streets, steaming. The only thing is, if he loves you more, he beats you more, too. That's just the way it is. One of the doctors in the emergency ward had a crush on me. He stitched together my eye after Too Quick beat me with a silver coffee pot. Then the doctor leaned down and kissed it. It tickled right on the part where the thread was coming through. On a slow day, in the rain, We'd fight a lot, me and the other wives. I ran down the street carrying Susie's wig with a bit of flesh still lodged inside it. Most of the time, we're a big family, word. No one believes it.